Hello, everyone. Welcome to Living the Breakthrough, T1D Stories, where we have conversations with people who break through the challenges of living with T1D to achieve whatever they want in life, both big and small. My name is Adrian Gonzalez, and I'm part of the Greater New England chapter of Breakthrough T1D. My guest today is Michael Underwood, who is a professional ice hockey player with the Maine Mariners, a minor league team affiliated with the Boston Bruins. And like most hockey players, I believe he learned how to skate before he even learned how to walk. But I'll let him, confirm that rumor or not. Michael's among the many elite athletes who excel in their sports despite having T1D, such as NFL players Noah Gray and Mark Andrews, professional golfer J.J. Spaun, and 13-time Olympic gold medalist Gary Hall Jr., the swimmer. So I was very excited when Michael agreed to be on the program because there are many athletes out there, both young and small, who get diagnosed with T1D and immediately have a lot of questions and concerns about how this will impact their ability to continue to compete and enjoy their sport. So Michael's yet another example of how T1D doesn't stop you from pursuing your dreams and your goals. And with that, Michael, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm happy to be here. I appreciate you having me on.
So, Michael, the first time that we spoke, just to get introduced to each other, I noticed that poster in the background, and I'm not a big official, I'm not as knowledgeable about hockey as I am about baseball and some other sports. So I wanted to know who that great hockey player in the background is that you have up on your wall as a source of inspiration for you. So who is that in the background there?
So that's actually me when I was 10. We went to a tournament in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, and our team was sponsored by the Red Wings. So we wore the Red Wings gear, everything, apparel, track suits, bags, jerseys, the whole shooting match. We were the Detroit Red Wings. And we went and played this tournament. It was at the West Edmonton Mall in Edmonton, Canada. And so we're there for 10 days. Didn't leave the mall once. Hotel, restaurants, amusement park, ice rink. It had everything. So I got that when I was younger, just as kind of like a Christmas present from my parents, and it's been up ever since.
Wow, that's wonderful. So such a great memory of that time. And again, I mean, it's so huge and life size that I assumed it was an NFL, excuse me, NHL player already. But that's going to be you, hopefully, in the future.
Yeah.
Whether hopefully in a Boston Bruins uniform or not a Red Wings one. But anyway, I digress. So let's begin now with kind of the question that we begin on this program on Living the Breakthrough, and that's with the beginning of your T1D story. I mean, when did you get diagnosed with, type 1 diabetes? I mean, what were some of the symptoms you were experiencing? And I mean, what do you remember about that day?
Yeah, so I got diagnosed, as some would say, probably a bit late. I got diagnosed on April 10th, 2024, almost 3 months before my 26th birthday. So it was fairly late. You read books, you see stories of people getting diagnosed when they're 8 or 9. So it kind of came as bit of a shock to me and the rest of my family that a 26-year-old could develop type 1 diabetes. But yeah, I was I remember the day vividly. I was driving home from physical therapy. I had just had shoulder surgery. I was about 4 months into shoulder rehab. And I just pulled out of the parking lot at physical therapy, and I got a call from my doctor. I had gone in a couple of days prior for just my routine yearly checkup. Didn't think anything of it. Just figured he was calling to, give me the rundown of everything and tell me everything was good and send me on my way. And he was kind of feeling it out at the start of the conversation. And I was like, okay, like, what's he about to say? And sure enough, he was like, hey, so we saw some stuff in your urine sample. We want to do more blood tests, but we think you develop type 1 diabetes. And I kind of took me back, and I was like, is he calling the right guy? Like, I'm 26 years old. Like, I'm an athlete. Like, I'm in good shape. Like, what's the deal here? Excuse me. And so as we started talking more about it, he was like, well, have you had any symptoms? And I was like, not that I think. Like, I haven't noticed anything crazy. And he's like, well, have you been drinking a lot of water? I was like, yeah, but I just attributed that to the fact that I was finally getting back into working out post-surgery. And he was like, well, have you lost some weight? And I was like, yeah, but also, like, post-shoulder surgery, I wasn't working out as much as I usually do. I was like, okay, I just lost some muscle mass. It'll be fine. Like, we'll get back to where we need to be. So that was two for two. Next question, he's like, have you been peeing a lot? And I'm like, well, yeah, but, like, I'm just drinking a lot of water. I'm staying hydrated. It kind of comes with it. So three for three. And he was like, what about, like, dry mouth, dry lips? And I was like, yeah, four for four, you know, waking up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom. And so the more we talked and the more I thought about it, I was like, whoa, like, I guess I have been having a lot of symptoms. I just didn't really associate them as symptoms of something that was going on. So finished the conversation, hung up, immediately broke down crying. Didn't really know anything about type 1 diabetes or diabetes in general.
So there was no history of this in your family?
Zero. Not type 1, not type 2. Zero diabetes in great-grandparents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, nobody. So it was pretty shocking. So I was driving home, and it was about a 40-minute drive home from PT, and kind of just sobbing the whole way. I didn't really know what to think. I didn't know if I was going to be able to continue playing hockey. And that was kind of the first thing that came to my mind. And I couldn't really say anything. I couldn't really talk. It just, the only thing that kept coming out was I just kept saying why over and over again. And I was like, I couldn't understand it. I couldn't piece it together. And so I kind of let that run its course, let the emotion figure itself out. And I was like, okay, I need to call my parents. So I called my dad and told him, and he's usually a pretty lively guy. And when I told him, you could have heard a pin drop. Like, it was dead silence. And, like, obviously he didn't know what else to think. He's like, all right, like, obviously we're going to get through it. Like, we'll figure it out. And then he was like, all right, I'll see you when you get home. Decided to wait to tell my mother, because probably not news that you want to relay to your mother over the phone. So I got home, waited for my dad to get home. My mom walked in, and we were sitting on the couch, and I was like, hey, can you come here for a sec? Like, I want to tell you something. And so I told her, and she thought I was messing with her at first, because me and my dad are usually big jokesters around the house. And she's kind of had enough of our shenanigans, I would say. So she was like, no, like, there's, you're 26. Like, you guys are messing with me. And I looked at her and I was like, I wish, like, this is not something I would joke around about. Like, I do my fair share of joking, but this is serious.
Right.
So we just kind of talked it out from there and tried to figure out, like, what the next steps were. And then I came up to my room and just kind of wanted to be by myself for a little bit and sit with, not like sulk, but kind of sit with that emotion and try and process it. And then I remember, I called my girlfriend, I called my best friend Dom, just kind of talking to anyone that I could that I knew was going to be there for me.
Right.
And everyone was awesome. Everyone was, hey, like, we're going to figure it out. We're going to get through this. Like, it's not going to be anything that gets in the way. And like I said, I wasn't very educated on it. So I was like, well, we don't know if it's going to get in the way or not. Like, it could stop me from from doing everything I want to do. Like it's could completely change my life. So it was, first day was very, very long and a lot of emotion, I would say.
Yeah, I would, you know, not surprising by anything that you said. And gosh, you know, very, very touching to hear you kind of recollect that. And that wasn't even that long ago. Like you said, it was April of 2024. So it's just, you know, still relatively fresh in your mind, just a year
Right.
plus ago. You know, and I think that is the I would say by now a misconception out there that break, you know, T1D only affects kids, like younger kids, you know, infants and, you know, people under 10 and things like that. But I remember when the first time I heard the statistic that more than half of the new diagnoses today are adults. And in fact, I think it's people over 30, you know, which is part of the reason why JDRF changed its name to Breakthrough T1D, because
Right.
You know, to reflect that reality and the fact that people that are diagnosed as kids ultimately become adults themselves, right? And so that juvenile part of the former JDRF name really didn't make any, you know, much sense anymore. So when did you, so no history in the family. So again, same with experience with my family, with my daughter, when she was diagnosed, it came out of the blue. You know, I can totally relate to your dad and kind of can hear a pin drop, because I was actually traveling, when my wife called and told me the news. And to me, it was like, you know, what I couldn't even comprehend what she was telling me, because it made absolutely, you know, no sense. So when did you ultimately meet with kind of an endocrinologist? Was it like that same week and you know, started the education process?
So we had gotten recommended to a endo from my from our family doctor. And I think we went in maybe 2 days later. They were like, "Hey, this isn't something that you can really sit on. You got to get it. You got to address it pretty quick." So we went to the endo. They kind of gave me the crash course, the typical, all right, like it's not necessarily sugar, it's carbs. You got to take, they gave me the pens. Okay. You got to take this long acting. And when you eat, depending on how many carbs you eat, you got to take this fast acting, and depends on how many carbs you eat for the dosage. You want to be 70 to 180, but your target is 110. All, you know, all the stuff.
So
I'm
all
sure
of a sudden,
everyone,
if you weren't good at math before, now you had to be really good at math, right?
Yeah, well, that's the one positive, is I was a finance major in college, so I had that going for me. And that's like one of the very first times that my girlfriend came to visit after I got diagnosed. I was sitting there before dinner, and this was before I had my pump. So I'm sitting there with a piece of paper and a pen, trying to figure out, okay, I'm at 170. This is my correction factor. This is my insulin to carb ratio. This is how much I need to get me to here for eating this amount of carbs. And she looked at me and she was like, "It's a good thing you're good at math, because if I had to do this, I don't know what I would do." And I was like, "Well, you'd figure it out, but."
Yeah, well, that's the reality for, I think, most people. And obviously, if you're a child, it's impossible for you to, you know, really do all those calculations in real time. And even for the parents, I mean, my wife and I, we were also, you know, struggling with that and having to read the nutrition labels and then, you know, realizing that it's not an exact science, right? Because, you know, a slice of pizza is very different than a piece of, you know, just a regular piece of bread or rice or,
right.
So there's also the, you know, the fat content plays a role in all that. So, you know, it's just not an exact science. You know, going back to something you said before too, that I think really struck me, is, you know, that whole question, like asking why, right? What, I think that's kind of common to anyone who's gets diagnosed with anything, you know, unexpectedly. It's like, you know, why me? Why did this happen? And so forth. That really resonated with me. I think that's a common question too, that a lot of people wrestle with, because it's like, especially someone like yourself, who's an athlete, right? You've said, gosh, you know, I'm taking care of myself. I'm eating right. I'm physically active, you know, I treat my body well, and now it's like kind of like failed me in some way, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not fair, right? You know, and maybe you have buddies or others that, maybe don't have that same discipline in terms of how they eat and how they take care of themselves physically, and they seem perfectly, they're perfectly fine. They don't have this. And I think those kind of things kind of go through your head. And what I've learned even with myself and being a cancer survivor is that, sometimes the answer to the question why is we don't know. And you just have to just accept that, accept that response. Kind of moving on a little bit, and you've touched upon this already. Obviously you're an elite hockey player at the doorstep of kind of breaking into the NHL. And like you said, when you were first diagnosed, you were scared and concerned that T1D was going to, kind of be a roadblock or be an impediment to have you achieve your ultimate goal and dream. I mean, based on now it's been a year plus. I mean, based on your experience and what you've been able to achieve so far, I mean, what would you tell a young athlete today or anyone really who might be having those same fears and concerns about, after they get diagnosed?
That this in no way, shape, or form will even remotely come close to stopping you from getting to where you want to be. That was one of the big things that in my last year and 4 months of type 1 diabetes and my new life, that's been one of the big things that I've wanted to try and help with is making sure little kids who are falling in love with hockey or falling in love with baseball or tennis or golf or whatever sport it may be, that they don't have that feeling that I had in the car the day when I talked to my doctor at first. Because I'm 26, like I can deal with my emotions and I can understand that. If I want to push through something, like I can push through it. But for a 7 or 8 year old kid that gets told that he's different from everyone else at school and he needs to start doing this and this and this, and his pancreas doesn't work and he doesn't produce enough insulin for his body to function normally, that's a lot for a young kid. And I don't ever want a kid to stop playing a sport that they love because they think it's too overwhelming, or they think there's too much work to be done, or ultimately they can't achieve what they want to achieve because of a faulty pancreas. It's nothing we asked for. It's nothing we did to ourselves. It's just kind of the cards we're dealt in life. And I think that's going back to the why thing. I'm a big believer that everything happens for a reason. And I think my why is to help younger kids not be scared of this might get in the way of whatever I want to achieve. Because if I'm obviously like, I want to be a parent someday. I want my kid to play sports. I want him to have fun. I want him to do whatever they enjoy. And I can't imagine the feeling of my kid coming to me being like, I don't think I can do this because of X, Y, and Z. So that's been the biggest thing is like just kind of conveying to them that, yeah, it's another obstacle, but people in this community are so far and away stronger than any people I've ever met in my life. And it's a bump in the road. Like it's not anything that's gonna prevent you from getting to where you want to get to. And like I said, leaning on other people, leaning on your support system, leaning on your friends, your family, people you meet through Breakthrough T1D or someone you see at the store with a Dexcom on and you start chatting them up. Like it's all those little things can help. So at the end of the day, I just want little kids to understand that it's not over. Like that was my thought, and I don't want people to have that thought.
Yeah, and that's great. And that's why I was so happy when you agreed to come into the program, because I think that is a very important message for for kids. I mean, just speaking for my own daughter, she cried that first day too. She was scared. She didn't know what it was. She was 11 years old at the time. She honestly thought that she was going to die. That was her, initial thought. Fast forward a few years, she's run, two marathons. She cycled a century with Breakthrough T1D. She played rugby in college and continues to play rugby after college. And just like hockey, rugby is a contact sport, right? And she played high, she when she was in middle school, when she was shortly after she was diagnosed, she was playing soccer at the time, and she was still continuing to be able to play soccer. So it doesn't, doesn't hold you back. Does that mean that, sometimes it doesn't create frustrations where, if you go low, you got to take yourself out of the game or something, to correct it? Sure. But, it's not exactly the same, but at the same time, it's no different than, having some other kind of physical injury, right? Where you hurt your knee or your ankle, whatever. You have to take some time off to heal. But I think that's a, that's a great, that's a great message, because I think, it's only natural, like you said. You cried when you first, and you're 26 years old, right? And it's natural to cry because it's scary. And gosh, if I was diagnosed with that, and I'm 55, I'd probably cry too, right? Because it's scary, it's different. It's something you don't expect. But I think, to your point, and we're going to talk about that later, it's once you start learning more about it, and once you start really building that community around it, that you realize that, hey, this is something that's not only manageable, but something that's really not, this big obstacle in the way of what I want to achieve. But before we get to that question, I want to talk about, diet and exercise, which, are not only a big part of an athlete's life, and I know that because all four of my kids are athletes, and our grocery bill is huge. We probably, buy more at BJ's and Costco than, we almost pay as much there than we do in rent, but those are two factors also that, greatly affect, blood glucose levels, again, diet and exercise. So how have you managed those two things, diet and exercise, to help you stay fit, healthy, and on the ice? And I mean, what are some of the things you do to help you keep your blood glucose in control?
So I've learned a lot along the way. It hasn't always been pretty. It hasn't always been perfect. In fact, it's never been perfect, but it's one of those things that once you realize the imperfections and that you're just every day you're trying to keep up, it sounds counterintuitive, but it gets easier once you understand that it's never going to be fully perfect. But I do really try to limit carbs as much as I can. And if I do eat carbs, it's more of a complex carb. Sweet potato, spaghetti squash, frozen fruit versus normal fruit. And I've also realized that most carb-heavy foods or snacks are not worth the stress of looking at my phone and seeing my blood sugar at 250, because then I get a little irritable and I'm not fun to be around. So, a lot of clean eating, a lot of protein, a lot of fat and fiber if I am going to eat carbs. And then something that I've found to be very beneficial to me is walking. Post-meal walks, whether it be 5 minutes once around the neighborhood or a 20, 30-minute stroll at night, that has been something that immediately, like if I eat and I'm coming out of the meal and I'm at 170 and I'm climbing, I'm like, okay, let's go hit a walk. I know it'll stop it in its tracks, and then I'll come right back down to 130, 140, and then by the time I go to bed, I'll be in a perfect spot. So that's also something that I've realized is obviously with the time that your endocrinologist wants you in range, they say 70% of the time. So if you're in range while you're sleeping, like if you can go to bed in a good spot and be in range, that's 8, 9, 10 hours right there. That's almost half your day. And then you need 4, 5, 6 more hours of the time you're awake being in a good spot. Like that's doable if you break it down into little sections like that. And as you go through, like you look at your Dexcom app, okay, for the last 14 days I've been in range 82% of the time. I'm going to try and beat it. Like it's turned into, I'm such a competitive person that it's turned into, okay, I'm going to get better and better and better and better and better until I can't get any better. So yeah, I think walking, eating clean, eating at home, eating out is the kiss of death for diabetics. It's even if you, even if I were to eat the same meal at home that I do out there with the same ingredients, they're going to be vastly different. They're going to affect my blood sugar differently. It's just, like, I'll still go out to eat with my friends, but it's a very rare occurrence that you'll catch me going out and eating tacos. But at home, like we meal prep, cook breakfast at home. If I'm going to be out for an extended period of time, I'll pack a lunch, I'll pack some snacks. And that's just, that's the reality of it all is you can never be over-prepared.
Right. I think the positive thing is in some ways is that, I mean, obviously being an elite athlete like you are and, you know, being on the ice and going after this dream, you're probably more disciplined, let's say, than the average person in terms of really watching all aspects of your health, what you eat, how you exercise, your sleep and all that. But you know, even with just the food prep, I mean, I think there's so much talk today about processed food and, eating fast food and so forth. So I think one of the, side benefits of doing what you're doing is that you're just naturally eating. Even if you didn't have diabetes, you're just really
right,
setting yourself up to eat just more healthy in general,
For sure.
So you almost look at it from another way. It's like, I'm, even if I didn't have diabetes, this is probably what I would be doing anyway, because I want to be as healthy as possible, as physically strong as possible, feeling as healthy as possible, so that, every time I take the ice, I'm as strong and alert and strong and so forth. And, if I'm eating fast food every day and if I'm, eating out every day, you probably wouldn't feel that way anyway. But it just so happens that also for your case in particular, has these added benefits from helping you maintain control. Now, you mentioned Dexcom. Do you have a continuous loop system? Do you have like a pump and Dexcom? Or how do you currently control your and manage your diabetes?
Yeah, so I wear a G7 and I wear an Omnipod 5. I started out on a G6. No, started out G7, did the shots. And then when the insurance finally kicked in and said they were going to start paying, I went to the Omnipod. So I had to go back to the G6 because they weren't compatible with G7s yet. So I did G6 Omnipod for a while. Now I'm been G7 Omnipod since. It's been good. It's been way easier to deal with than having to give yourself however many six shots a day. But it's one of those things. It's funny. Like you pull out your, I still use the controller because the phone app hasn't been too kind to me with the Omnipod. But I'll pull out my controller and people would be like, "Oh, is that your phone?" And I'm like, "No," like I try and explain it to them and they're like, "What?" And I'm like, "That, never mind. Just don't worry about it."
Yeah. It's the same with my daughter. She has the same setup and she still uses the controller as well. And I think the other thing that you mentioned, and I think it's important for folks to realize that is that, and we talked about this in a previous episode, is that, if you strive for perfection, you're just going to disappoint yourself because you're never going to get, perfect, control because, yeah, you want to go out with your friends every once in a while and go have those tacos, or it's just, the reality that you can eat the same thing day in and day out, and you might be more stressed one day than the other. You might just maybe battling a cold one day and another. And there's only so much you can control, and you can't control it 100%, but you do your best. And what works for you, over time you've learned what works best for you. And I think what works for you may not necessarily work for somebody else, but I think my takeaway is that you've learned things like walking after a meal helps you, particularly at night and before you go to bed. For somebody else, it might be meditating, or it might be something else, right? So I think my main takeaway is, listen to your body, look at the data that you have now. I mean, we have so much data now, everyone with these new devices, that you're able to kind of see how certain things react. And if you learn from it, you're able to do what works best for you, and continue to put yourself in the position to be as healthy and as best in control as possible. I want to go back to something you talked about earlier, which is my next question. You talked about like finding that support group and that that symptom, that again, support group. And that's something we've talked about in other episodes as well, in terms of the importance of having community and a support team, because again, it's scary and lonely when you first get diagnosed, and especially when, like in your case and in my daughter's case, that there was no history of T1D in your family, or you don't know anybody else with it. Can you share a little bit about your support team and the role that they play in helping you when when you need them? And also, how did you come up, how did you find this community and build these relationships?
So, I mean, I think first and foremost, my parents have been rock stars. I know it gets said a lot, and it's kind of a cliche, but I really truly believe that if it weren't for them, I don't know where I'd be. They go above and beyond every day, and night, whether it's barging in my room at 3 a.m. because I'm not waking up from my low alarm, or texting me at 4 in the afternoon, just, "Hey, just checking in. Saw you're at 2:20. You feeling okay?" Or whatever it may be. Little things and big things. They do it all. So they've been phenomenal. I love them very much, and I don't think I would be able to get through this without them. Same goes for my girlfriend and my best friend. They have been two extremely influential people throughout this journey. Just a set of ears to listen when you need to just vent, whether I need to complain or whether I need to talk about what's going on or whatever. They're always there.
And it's okay to complain, right? It's okay to vent. I mean, some days you need to,
100%.
right? Because it's like, this sucks. Why don't
100%. I mean, I'm 26 years old. I still get frustrated. Well, now I'm 27. I still get frustrated and cry. I still have bad days. I still get irritated. It's what comes with it. And if you have the people there to back you up, you'll get through it. Like it sucks in the moment, but you realize that this can give you a really good outlook on the relationships that you have with people. And I think it's made me realize how lucky I really am to have the people that I have in my life, my parents, my girlfriend, my best friend, my sister, my grandparents, everyone. It really is a team effort. It's not everyone's like, "Oh my God, you're so strong and you're awesome and you do this." And I'm like, "Well, I got the easy job. I just sit here and type some numbers into a controller, and everyone else has to deal with my, like, when I have a bad mood or I have a bad attitude or I'm going low and what." Like, it's so I mean, and not to downplay it, like, it is a lot of work. But when you have a good support system like that, it can make it easier. And I think as I've gotten into it, I've become, I don't want to say more open, but I've been looking for more relationships like that through the community of type 1 diabetes because the people that I have met have been nothing but phenomenal. We did a fundraiser this year in Maine. It was a Breakthrough T1D fundraiser, and we just put up these posters throughout the rink, and they did an announcement and they put the thing on the Jumbotron and scanned the QR code, and they kind of read my story off, and we ended up getting around, I think, $5,000.
Wow. That's fantastic.
So it was a pretty good night. And then post game, we actually did a meet and greet, and I didn't expect it to be anything big. And our media lady brought me up there, and I turned the corner, and it was just a room full of little kids and their families. And they all start, my girlfriend got a video of it, and I come around the corner and they all start clapping and cheering. And I was like, oh my God, I'm going to start crying. So I got to meet all these little kids and their families, and just talk and answer questions and ask questions. And like, no one has all the answers, but something works differently for someone. Something works for this person, not for this person. To be able to lean on other people that you know are going through the same thing that you are, and you know that they understand it. That's like a bond that I've never ever experienced in my life. 'Cause you meet those people and it's an instant connection.
Right.
And there's one family in particular, that I met that day. The little boy had just gotten diagnosed, the Friday before, and the game was on Sunday, I think. So they came out and we were chatting. And I still talk to them. We exchange texts, we FaceTime. And it's just, it helps me, I'm sure more than it helps him, just to see him do what he does as a 8, 9, 10 year old, and being able to deal with this. Like, I remember specifically later in the season, we played a Saturday away game, and then we got home late at night, early in the morning, 2, 3 a.m., and we're supposed to play the next day at 3 in the afternoon. And diabetics know that lack of sleep, your blood sugar is not very well controlled. So I must have got woken up 3 or 4 times that night with lows, and probably had 8 or 10 packs of fruit snacks, and just nothing was working, and couldn't get any sleep, and couldn't get my blood sugar up, and I was irritated. And my girlfriend was visiting me at the time from school, and I was like, listen, like, I don't think I can do it today. Like, I'm gonna text our coach and tell him and be like, hey, I was up all night with my blood sugar. Like, I just don't think I got it in me today. I don't think I can do it. And as I grabbed my phone to text our coach, I got a text message from this family, from the dad. And it was a video of his son with his jersey on. And he said that he was coming to the game. He was excited to see me, and he was going to be cheering me on. And I started crying, and I was like, I got to play. Like, I have to play. I was like, I can't let this stop me. And then he looks at that and be like, well, if he can't do it, like, well, then maybe I can't do it. And that's been something that has stuck with me and will stick with me forever, because it was like a sign from God. It was like exactly what I needed in that moment to be like, yeah, you're having a tough day. Yeah, you're having a tough night. You didn't sleep very well. You don't feel good. You're tired. But like, you're stronger than this. You can do this. Right. And it wasn't me. It wasn't anyone else. It was this little 8-year-old kid. And that's what I've come to understand is the most beneficial from this, is knowing that other people can give you strength that you don't necessarily have.
Wow, that's a great, great story, and great relationship that you've been able to establish. My daughter actually participates in a big sister program where she mentors. I forget how old the girl is now, but I think she might be like it's 8 or 9 years old. But kind of similar experience, right? For her. For this little girl to be able to see my daughter and see her out in the, hey, she plays rugby. Hey, she's out there working. Hey, she likes to put on makeup just like I do, and they have those special moments together. I think my daughter almost had the same exact comment that you said, and she gets probably more out of it in some days than, the little girl
For
does,
sure.
because it really provides her with, additional purpose and meaning and turning this crappy disease into something positive. And you know what? I mean, I think that's so true in life because hopefully you'll have a long and successful hockey career. But ultimately, like everything, that chapter closes and you'll do something else. And what really matters in the long term is these relationships that you establish with your girlfriend and the relationships you obviously have with your family and your extended family and those with your teammates and best friends and so forth. And the fact that they're there for you right now and they'll continue to be there for you, that's great. And a great source of strength and inspiration for you and those around you. So let's wrap up with looking ahead to the future, right? And it's a future that we all can't wait for, and that is a world without type 1 diabetes. Obviously, you're still relatively new that you can remember life without type 1 diabetes.
Right.
For those that were diagnosed very early, or even like my daughter, she's been 14 years plus now living with diabetes, so she probably doesn't remember too much about life without it. But what would a world without type 1 diabetes mean to you, Michael?
Well, first of all, I think I'm not a doctor, but I think that by the time I'm gone, there will be something that there will be a cure, or there will be something to deal with this better than what we have now. And the technology now is amazing, but like I've seen these stories about these stem cell treatments and all this other stuff about people being cured. So I think it's just a matter of time. But it would mean a lot. I mean, it would less stress, more normal days. No little kids being scared that they will be kept from achieving their dream. No parents crying when their kid gets diagnosed. I feel like that's kind of the biggest thing for me, is like thinking about other people who have been diagnosed. Like, I know I can deal with it. I just hate when I see other people hurting because they go through it. So it would mean a lot. It would be great in so many ways, but also I don't know if I would necessarily change anything about how my life has gone, even with this. Like, I've brought so many different people into my life, and like I said earlier, I've built so many long-lasting and meaningful relationships from it, that at the end of the day, it's something that's a part of me. It doesn't necessarily define who I am, but it is a part of me. And I don't know that I would want to trade that for anything, to be honest.
Yeah, no, I think that's wonderful. I think I think that's a common thread from all the other guests that we've talked about. Obviously, it's not only just will be a great day for themselves, obviously, but I think what you said is spot on. It's just thinking of others, right? And not having kids or even adults, having to go through what you and my daughter and somebody that have already been diagnosed have gone through in terms of that fear, that uncertainty. The bumpy road in this, particularly in those early days, trying to figure out, your insulin level and, how to manage this effectively and so forth. Really, just putting an end to that. And it'll be a great day. And you're right. I mean, I've been now with my daughter, 14 years, and been part of the board with, Breakthrough T1D, and I've seen so much progress being made on so many fronts with regards to getting closer to a cure, to improved ways to treat it and control it with some of these newer technologies, the closed loop systems. You brought up stem cell research, a lot going on that front. So I know, you talk to folks that have been living with type 1 diabetes for 30, 40, 50 years, and they'll say, well, we've heard this, we're closer to a cure for many decades now. But even some of them say, even though we've heard that in the past, we feel now there's actually things happening, that there's actually substance to that phrase that we're closer to a cure, just because of just the pace of the way we're learning more and more about this disease, and there's so much more funding going to it, and so forth, which is why we continue to fundraise and get money for this, because we're getting closer for sure. Well, Michael, thank you again very much for making the time to be with us and for sharing your story. I think mission accomplished. I think by sharing your story and being kind of your heartfelt stories really, I think, came through to anyone watching this, particularly any young kids and young athletes that heard you today, should feel inspired and should feel confident that hey, if Michael can do it, if Michael's on the verge of breaking into the NHL, hey, I can do anything myself. So again, thank you so much, for being with us. I'm sure that your hard work and dedication will continue to pay off. And I'll tell you, when that day comes that you take the ice for the Boston Bruins or any other NHL team, I'm going to be among the first to buy your jersey. So.
Sounds awesome. Yeah, I appreciate you having me on. It's been great talking with you. And like I said earlier, it's anyone who has this in their life, it's an immediate connection. So I, from the first time we started talking, it's been super easy. So I appreciate you having me on and letting me share my thoughts.
Absolutely. And I want to thank those of you that are watching. If you enjoyed this episode, share it with your family and friends. And if you're living the breakthrough with T1D and want to share your story, feel free to contact me and maybe you'll be the next guest on Living the Breakthrough. Again, thank you for watching and look forward to seeing you in a future episode. Have a great day.